All right, everybody. Today I am joined with Austin again for a Digital Space Bros chat talking about Chia. We Chia Bros, we talking Chia, NFT roadmap, Chia price, roadmap impact on Chia price. Some other things. Austin, say what up. How's your week gone, man?
It's going pretty good. I think it's been a pretty fun last week. You know, we got the roadmap and honestly some pretty exciting stuff. I really like how the roadmap has kind of gone off the Trello and more so on this. I think it brings more collaboration to it, like allows for more public discussion. I've been putting some comments and marking some things as important to me and stuff. So I think it's been a pretty fun week. What do you think about the roadmap so far?
The collaborative effort that put it together and has produced it, I think, was probably not as small as we might assume, because I think there was a lot of back end work, because this is not just like they copied and pasted it off of Trello. It's actually revisited everything that they put on here, cleaned it up, brought it up to date. And the interactivity that we get with Product Board, I think, is, like you just said, highly collaborative. So I am going to be going through. There was a couple of actually like Google Docs and stuff that I'm going to have to request access to read some of them to get up to speed on them. But I'm very excited for the clear, concise viewpoint of what we have in store. Some of these things I'm very, very bullish on. Some of these things I'm like, meh. Some of these things are important also, but maybe they don't impact price at all. You know, I think there's some things in there like that. I think if we're talking about price, let's put the context of the date on this, because most likely this will be a couple days till we release this. And this is Saturday afternoon that we're filming this on, folks. And the Chia price is currently sitting at about $38.90. Last time I checked, is that right about where it's at right now?
Yep, $38.39. I think it's reacting to the market, the broader market kind of dumping a bit. That is what it is. But, you know, the price is going to be what it is. It's kind of a little bit out of our control unless we have millions of dollars to pump it, but I don't think we do.
If you do have $7 million and you're interested in pumping it, let me know, because I'd like to follow along and do a series on you pumping the price of Chia, because it really is actually remarkably cheap to leverage and pump the price of Chia. It is so thin, the volumes that get traded on it,
yeah,
that even purchases in the tens of thousands of dollars can move the needle. And it's just interesting how thin that volume is right now. Let's talk about something before we get into the roadmap here, though. Let's talk about the announcement of the Carbon Warehouse and what you see as far as the implications of that. So I talked about that ad nauseum. What's your take?
Yeah, so I think it's been interesting, because, you know, I think the code name was Asteroids, right? And so we've heard about Asteroids for a while, I think about around like a year or so now. And so kind of seeing it finally be announced, it's happening, here are the partners, here's what the goal and the mission is. I think it's really, really exciting.
Understand it all?
I don't fully understand it. Doing like a little bit of surface level research on it, it seems like they're almost making a fund where people can kind of, aggregate and try and get some private funding to be able to, you know, build on top of all of this, right?
There is an aspect of it that's that, for sure. There's an aspect of it that is basically auditing and controlling and making sure they're high quality, the assets that are on there in the first place. And then there is the actual, we've got drones, we're surveilling, this is the imagery. I imagine some of that actually lives on some of Chia Tech also, which is very fascinating. Then there, I think, is like another segment, which is the bigger, broader segment. But I think there's two segments of like buyers of these. Like there's Fortune 500, large companies, large institutions. Yeah. Those will be interested in buying in. And then, of course, intergovernmental transactions. So both of those very large in the CAT transaction sphere, in my estimation, because we're talking about one CAT per one ton. And when people go and buy, they buy millions, hundreds of thousands, big numbers. Mm-hmm. So that is possibly also something that I think is pretty interesting. Now, the on-ramp to it is something I don't understand completely.
And so that's that. So one of the most exciting things I think about this is seeing how the on-ramps kind of come to market here. Because if we have some really good on-ramps, then that eventually flows downstream to retail. I think that in kind of seeing what what it translates into like how we're going to be able to buy, you know, XCH or maybe even these carbon credits. It's a pretty exciting thing. It's a pretty exciting thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say that from our perspective, like I can understand buying them as an investment for ourselves or versus buying and retiring. Like that's a concept that's new to me is like when they call it retiring when you buy them, but it's more actually akin to burning them. They're just using, you know, retire as kind of the nomenclature because it's a little bit more friendly than burning. but there was a lot of back and forth on Keybase that I learned quite a bit, brought myself up to speed, maybe 10 to 15% more than I ever thought I would be on this topic. So there, I think, is a definite chance for the on-roads. And I've asked Gene pointedly, will these on-roads increase fee pressure? He's acknowledged yes. On Twitter, as a matter of fact, also yep, in public
format,
on Keybase as well. And also this creates retail buy pressure for XCH as well. So those two things I'm excited for. Now, is it big volumes? I don't know. And how much transaction do you do on an ongoing basis is another question. I also have another question, which is like small person, me, you, whatever. It sounds like that's a little ways out from what I understand, being able to actually go and buy them ourselves. Is that your take?
Yeah. That's kind of my take as well. And I kind of just did a quick little Google search about how much these carbon credits are, and price per ton for credits are about, you know, $5 to $6. Now that was kind of back in 2020. So who knows?
Like 15 to 17 for high quality.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that could bring a lot of new influx of capital into the Chia sphere. Because I'd be curious too, are they going to be buying these carbon credits with Chia, or are they going to be buying them with a stablecoin or some sort of, or like with fiat, like fiat to these carbon credit cats, right?
I don't know if there's a flow chart somewhere that exists people at Chia, but if there is, I would love to take a look at that. Cause seriously, I think there's steps in the process that I don't understand. So I'm not going to comment aside from saying, I don't understand all of that. I wish there were a flow chart that they produced. There is a flow chart that's out there. It does not explain the on-ramp part of it. To my knowledge, it explains the intergovernmental kind of interchange of it and the players that are working on it. But it doesn't necessarily say this is how retail goes into it. So is it like Cultivo bringing a pipeline of Fortune 500 companies or Aspiration bringing a pipeline of retail buyers? I don't know that. That is a good question. So I'm excited for fee and I'm excited for price for sure, because those things definitely impact Chia Farmer, me, you, most everybody watching this. So
yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep our eye on this and see if we can get some more further comment to talk about this at some point in the near term. So back to the product roadmap, though, really quick here. How much have you reviewed? Have you do you got it memorized?
I don't have it memorized, but I've definitely taken a quick look at it. I've been putting some things that are catching my eye, and I've kind of, cause you can mark them as provide feedback. Is this important? Is this nice to have? Is this critical? And then you can kind of put why, right? And so I've done that with a couple of them. One thing that kind of, sticks out to me that's in the more near term, for Q3. Is the NFT bulk minting tool. I think that this is going to be a pretty important thing to onboard more NFT projects into the ecosystem. That'll be something that will, I think, drive more, just more people into the ecosystem. So that's something that I think is pretty critical that's lacking. Cause, you know, if you want to mint a project and, you know, you want to try and mint, you know, a couple thousand NFTs, it's going to take you a bit to do it. And there's some technical know-how. But having a bulk minting tool just makes that so much easier, right? Just have it on autopilot. You can just mint when you need to mint. And then there you go, right?
So let's take that top tab, Q3 2022. And we see a lot of quality of life things, which I'm really glad for. We need those in node performance, wallet performance. There's certain things that happen that in the wallet are ouch. I know that if you're trying to snipe really quick and you have not pre-split coins, you can run into a scenario where it's I just fractured off everything else and I don't have enough to buy anything else. That's very easy to do.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is circulating around the NFT topic, because I think Chia NFT, if we're looking at it from an evaluative standpoint, has been more successful than Chia thought, but I don't know if it's the exact trajectory that Chia Official thought. And from a community standpoint, there's certainly things that I look at and I say, wow, awesome. And then there's certainly things I look at and I'm like, wow, spam. And then there's things I look at and I'm like, ooh, that probably is just a rug. So, I mean, we're getting the variety of NFT, and I myself was not NFT degen before all this. So like that has been a shock to the system kind of. I don't know what your level of degeneracy currently is or was. Actually, I do. So why don't you just tell people what's up?
Yeah, I would say that I'm pretty degenerate. I definitely enjoy, seeing the new projects coming out, trying to buy a few. I personally like the rares. So if there's a good rare that I can find, shout out to John at farmersmarket.cc. If you're trying to look at, how rare the NFTs that you have, make sure that you guys go over there and check it out. I normally don't really, purchase any NFTs unless they're on Farmer's Market or unless I know the person that actually minted the NFTs and the creators behind the project. And, you know, that's just mainly because it makes me feel a bit more comfortable knowing that it's not a rug. There's some projects out there, like I think Goblins and Moonbirds on Chia, like those are just derivatives of something that's on ETH. I'm personally not purchasing those ones.
Let's state clearly, they are making XCH on open source. You can just go download those images right now. They're CCO and they're free to just download. And
yeah, it's CCO, so that means that you can't really steal them. You can use them however you want, which for better or for worse, but you know, if you're going out there and buying into a project, make sure that you know what it is, and who's kind of behind it and why. That's just kind of my take on, or like my level of degeneracy of NFTs thus far is I kind of just like sniping some rares, you know, just for fun. I might resell them. So that's kind of,
you're probably the best person at that, actually.
I don't know.
Might be one or two others, but you're definitely in the top tier, top three, that are known. I'm sure there's other people out there.
There are.
But I've got to say, I think that the Chia NFT ecosphere also can be so much wider than what we're seeing right now and so much deeper with the application set that Chia brings. It's just the initial application of essentially JPEG art for the most part. We're seeing some GIFs with the, like the other day, I was like, hey, what do you guys think about the teddy bears? And they're like, I don't know. You know, I love those teddy bears,
though. I kind of like how they look too. I don't know who's behind it though.
I like that they're bouncing around and they look really happy. Yeah, they are kind of fun. And actually, you know who, let's speculate really quick. What is Gene's level of NFT degeneracy? Do you think he buys, or do you think people just dust him and give him like freebies?
I think that, I think that he doesn't buy them. I could be wrong here. I haven't asked him, but I think that he knows that he's a public figure. And so people are going to make, people in the NFT sphere call them honoraries. So yes, they'll make a very unique one and they'll make it specifically for one person. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of Gene, NFTs out there. So, you know, if someone's doing a Chia friend, they'll make a Chia friend that looks like Gene. Or if someone's doing, like space rats. Yeah, poodle, right? So there's all these, honorary ones that he gets. And I think that he really enjoys that. And I think it's really cool that, these projects are honoring him. I don't think that they make them for Bram because Bram won't retweet them.
Is that a big mistake though? Is that a big mistake is a good question. Maybe they should still make them for Bram.
I personally would. I would kind of make some honoraries for, you know, the biggest names in the Chia ecosphere because, you know, if you do get that retweet and you get some buy into a project, it doesn't hurt, right? It doesn't hurt.
I got to say that Bram is hella smart because he realized how he probably saw how destroyed his Twitter feed was going to get, did like some analysis in his brain and like saw the future and was like, if I get involved, my Twitter feed's going to be destroyed. My Twitter feed destroyed. I have no control over it anymore. It is taking a life of its own. Hundreds and hundreds of just airdrops daily. I'm muting them all. They never stop. They just never stop.
It is pretty annoying. I kind of censor my follows because of that. So, unless you're posting original content and not just retweeting airdrops and all that stuff, probably might not follow, but, just depends.
Yeah. I'm like fixing to take radical action, slash burn. Yeah. It's going to be off with their heads or something. I have no idea.
Yeah. So
stop doing that, people, if you're listening to this. All right. So we've got node performance, wallet performance, those things, quality of life. NFT for Cat offers, very cool. Something that, you know, wasn't there on launch day. A lot of teams would have, you know, benefited from that, not having to have those third parties. Data layer primitive, very excited for that. I think the VC list server simulator, and the one that I don't see any comments on, primitive for the data layer, I think is probably one of the biggest underlying technologies. I'm sure going to be commenting on that and marking it critical, in my opinion. Secure the bag, a really cool technique that they came out with. So we wrapped up our 2022 Q3. Q4, what excites you there?
Yeah, so in kind of looking at Q4, a lot of it's very... a little bit more on the technical side is what Q4 kind of feels like. Some things though that really pop out at me are clawback support and custody. Those ones are huge. I am very excited for that because, you know, there's certain things that the Chia has on their roadmap that are differentiators that they have versus other blockchains. I think that should be something that they are really leaning into. In addition to the stuff that's quality of life, because I feel like other blockchains have those quality of life things. So it's all important at the end of the day. But I'm really excited about internal custody, clawback support. Of course, the DID, kind of building upon their initial primitive. That'll be really interesting because I want to see a DID that you can go on to Space Scan, click on a DID, know who that person is, has like a whole bunch of data, like about them, their Twitter handle, maybe their Keybase name, a way that you can really associate, like how you can associate traits with NFTs. I would love to see traits on DIDs where you have, oh, here are all the social media accounts that I have. Here's my name. Here's any like professional credentials that I have, whether it be a certified financial advisor, whatever, right? That'll be something that will be very cool. And I think opens the door for people with NFTs to be able to say, hey, come and take a look at my gallery. And it's way easier to find rather than having to type in this whole string or go to a certain place to try and, you know, figure that out.
And while none of this is financial advice, Austin, are you a certified financial planner?
No.
Okay, good. I don't want anybody to misconstrue this as financial advice. Folks, this is definitely not financial advice, and do your own research on everything. Amen. Now, I definitely see Q4 as like feature. There's big features coming out here. Mm-hmm. Seems like to me, as far as wallet, like you said, the clawback support is something I personally really am looking forward to because I don't necessarily trust myself to send to like big transactions. You get scared. Like a 0.1 XCH transaction is like, all right, well, whatever. I lost $4, but you know, if you screw up a 1 or 10, or I may still have a XCH that I've lost somewhere. I don't know exactly where that is. I may have sent it off to somebody else. I really will figure it out eventually, but it's not good feeling when you have that. So that's something you definitely want to keep in mind, is that one will be really, really important to institutions. Mm-hmm. Really important to institutions that have to have that. Have you tried BladeBit 2, the disk plotter, at all yet? No.
No, I haven't, because I haven't really needed to plot anymore. Until I have the funds to be able to buy more hard drives, I don't think that I really see myself.
You have unutilized space.
Hundreds of gigabytes, if that. I
hear a plot or two in there.
There's a plot or two in there, but not enough to be able to dive into BladeBit. But I think you've been diving a little bit into BladeBit. What's your experience been on it?
So on my 5950X, not great, but that is really, I think, just a result of like the current state of high performance desktops is like, kind of, here's your graphics card, here's your really great processor, and you're not going to get a lot extra. So PCIe lanes, kind of very scrimpy on those. And that sucks because that means that my IO subsystem options stink also. So I even went into this in, you know, the 40 gigabit video where I was like up against the wall of trying to figure out how to get enough PCIe lanes to connect the 40 gigabit card because it was just too chintzy on them. Now, I think hopefully with Raptor Lake, we might get more PCIe lanes. I really hope so, but I'm actually thinking of blowing out the 5950X while I still got probably the best return on it.
And
I was doing a video and like I just had to stop the video. It was like 79 minutes on phase one. I was like, well, whatever, this is gonna be this is an abysmal time. Like, there's no good video there. So, and I mean, I tried a variety of settings and I was not able to get a good time on it. It was surprising, but it's also the IO subsystem on this particular machine. It just has an NVMe and a RAID 0 of SSDs. That usually actually has been decent enough for Mad Max to get, you know, pretty decent times. Yeah. But my idea of decent times has probably changed a lot in the past several months. So
yeah, what's your total plot time right now? About 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, times 8.
So 8 at a time at about 4 to 5 minutes. That is absolutely insane. So yeah, so I never really see myself really plotting really ever in the future, because, you know, if you're selling drives and you're selling them plotted, it might make a lot more sense for me to do that because of my electricity costs are super high here. It just doesn't make sense fully, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, like, there is a wear and tear aspect of, like, consumer drives that most people are likely to have. And so pre-plotted from somebody else, that kind of makes sense because it saves on wear and tear also. I think there's a couple other things that are cool in Q4 here. And this one is, it doesn't sound cool, but it's going to turn out to be maybe one of the biggest things. Cause I just today did like a really in-depth deep dive on all of the mobile wallet tech out there, where it's at. I installed it. I've got all of it installed and been trying out different things, different functions. All of it, none of it can get you mobile NFT. You cannot be mobile and buy NFT. That is impossible currently. That is with Pocket desktop. That's with Pocket's app. That's with Ozone. That's with, I mean, there's just, and to the credit of these, they don't say they can do it, but I wanted to evaluate it because I was confused when I went to Dexy and I saw the Ozone link and I was like, oh, cool. I can now just scan the QR code, but not yet. And I made sure I was in the beta so that I got the most latest APK for my phone. Maybe for iOS, it works. Do you have any insight into that? Because it seems weird for Dexy to publish that when it doesn't work, right?
You know, I think that they're doing it in preparation for it. And like, I think that Pocket, you know, I've been following him on Twitter, and he seems the most capable, I think, currently to put out a really good mobile wallet that you're able to trade NFTs with. I haven't tried it. And the reason why I haven't tried it is because, you know, I just don't currently see myself trading NFTs on my phone. I like the user interface on my computer to be able to do all the research that I need to do very quickly. You know, I can have Farmers Market open, Dexy, I can have Mint Garden open and kind of just make sure that I'm crossing all my T's, dotting all my I's. And it's easier to do that on the computer than it is on my phone. And so that's why I don't necessarily see myself really trading NFTs on my phone unless I know exactly what I want in advance. And I'm on the move, which I will probably be eventually. But, you know, if it's not ready yet, I'm not going to really try it personally.
Okay. So I missed several things because I had to be mobile and I already knew what I wanted, like, you know, kind of checking things out. I was like, I want this. I want this. Like, and the way I buy NFTs doesn't make sense. Like, I find a thing that I like a moose hat, and I'm like, I want to buy all the moose hats. So I just try to like make a list of all the moose hats. And as they're dropping randomly, like Scrutinous has kind of randomized his minting tool to where it just like, it's random. You better be paying attention. It really just is like, can you glue yourself to the computer for that long? And that's why I would never suggest that people want to use a mobile wallet as anything but a really hot wallet. But to be able to toss one XCH onto it and be able to, you know, if I'm going out somewhere, be like, aha, it popped up and like buy it. That'll be pretty cool for me. That'll help my degeneracy not be so tied to the desktop. That could be nice.
Yeah, I do agree. It'll be a huge move for the Chia ecosystem for sure once someone can do it and do it well. I'm definitely excited for it. I'll probably do it, but it's not my main source of Chia NFT degeneracy at the moment. So we'll see though. That could change when it comes out.
I am excited for the wallet SDK for that reason. I think it's going to make things a lot easier for mobile developers, and it'll make it like a conforming, this doesn't get hacked and broken kind of standard. So, I mean, if they write bad code, that could always happen, you know, it'll hopefully put some guardrails up against the client side of it that's interacting with the blockchain, wherever that's at, that will help people guide them in like better practices. Cause right now, they're just figuring it out on their own. And you're right, Chia B, excellent example of somebody who really is top notch in the Chialist development code. He's like, the other day he was commenting on something. He was like, look at me run through this linting and like breaking down a coin and like tracing a transit. And I was like,
yeah,
see, it's easy. And I was like, if you're you, it's
easy. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I'm like, I have no clue what I'm looking at or reading, but it looks incredible and great job and keep building.
Exactly. Exactly. On to 2023. So Q1, 2023. You know what else I noticed here? They're no longer talking about halves. They're talking about quarters, which I really appreciate that.
I do too. And it's going to be really interesting to see, okay, how on target are they going to be, right? I know that the Chia team doesn't like giving dates, but like giving quarters is, it's going to be a pretty interesting endeavor, I think, for them to really perform and to deliver on these. But what do you think about that?
So again, this goes back to the programming concept of building a good pyramid. And I think they've got really solid foundationals. And I think that it will be easier and easier for them to anticipate dates and to project and hit timelines and, you know, go through afterwards and say, yes, this sprint worked in this time frame, and no, this sprint didn't. Make lessons learned from that and apply them to the future sprints that they're doing on their topics. So I think that they're refining their processes internally, something we don't see at all. We can kind of see it on their GitHub, you know, the external facing, but like, we don't like participate in their standups or anything like that. But I definitely think that having quarters for these items is optimistic. I've noticed things shift around already from like initial day to now. Under construction was gaming primitive. Now it's in Q1 of 2023. And I think that's huge for like, and somebody the other day was like, really, you think this is the most important thing? And I'm like, man. And I think even you said that when we, before, like pregame folks, Austin called me out. He was like, really, gaming? It's like, I don't know, man. And I'm like, but it's bigger than just gaming. It's payment channels. And that brings like all this tech. So no doubt I want Chia Poker Night. If you're interested in Chia Poker Night, with us, sound off below, because that sounds like something fun to put together, right?
It's going to be probably in our Discord. We're probably going to have like an event. It's going to be a whole thing. I mean, it's a little while out, but it's probably going to happen. No doubt.
Yeah. I just hope it's not super rough. Like we're like, like having to write script, like I flipped the card over.
It would be interesting. I wonder if it's going to be in the GUI, like a GUI integration, or like a third party app, or all in the CLI. Is that what you think it's going to be?
I think it starts in the CLI.
Me too. Yeah. It makes the most sense.
I'm not afraid of it, and I think we can all make it work. I just I'm afraid of it. I think that you'll like the command structure will probably be super simple, and like we'll probably all get it, and it'll probably all not be that bad.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there'll be enough documentation, but I am excited for that. Not for any reasons like we would ever have like a buy-in. But yeah, there might be. Also, Enterprise Cat, that one didn't really like, I don't understand the difference between Enterprise Cat and non-Enterprise Cat. Did you get that difference at any point in time?
So, you know, I think that, so if you go to the key release features for the Enterprise Cat minting, I think it makes a little bit more sense. You know, I think their number one is wallet can be set up with multiple signers. That's big. You know, I think that, in the roadmap, conversation, Gene was alluding to how, you know, like, let's say you need one personnel to be in charge of transacting these cats. What happens if that person gets fired and they need to remove their access? And then I think that alludes to the rekeying of a wallet, right? So there's that. There's signers are granted permission before being able to sign transactions. Okay. Signers can have their permission revoked by an admin. That's what I was talking about. And then only those with permission can mint additional cats. So it seems like, you know, like outside of like, okay, like I want to mint a cat, right? And it's just a very basic cat. This kind of provides more out of the box functionality with the cat, where an enterprise might want these functions. But I do get what you're saying. It's like, okay, so, you know, shouldn't we already have that, right? Like, shouldn't that already be a thing?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, wait, but I thought there was like, that was part of like the other, and maybe there's overlap in these products also. That possibly could be like, there's some overlap in them, because seems like that was like kind of a multi-signature, but I guess multi-sig for one thing doesn't necessarily apply to everything. So maybe cat is different than, the puzzles are different. So definitely it probably doesn't universally apply, but it sounds like they're harmonizing the feature set between the puzzle sets. So that is something that brings, I think, really cool functionality and like in a relationship with the Chia ecosystem. That's got to be really difficult to do also. I mean, holy shit, like Chia Lisp, and they're harmonizing all of this together. Like that
it's pretty wild.
That is pretty wild. So enterprise custody, enterprise cat, those sound like maybe they're also in some form released beforehand, but I guess there's a secondary version for enterprises that more secure, something like that. Audited. Yep. I have no idea.
You know, I actually want to go back to gaming really quick. Can we go back to gaming and the implications of what gaming actually means, right? And this is something that you were talking about, layer two. We don't see layer two in the roadmap at all, but it seems
they don't want to be the people that do it, and they shouldn't be the people that do it. To be honest with you, I mean, they do so much.
They do.
But like creating a payment channel possibility conceptually could really accelerate somebody that is creating layer two tech for Chia. And I mean, for it to all be the same company that does every single thing is too much in my estimation. Like we need more client wallets. We do. We need more like ecosystem developers. We do. They're seriously, seriously geared towards getting ecosystem developers on board. Like I would say a quarter of these things are, hey, we're going to make it easier for people that are developing in the ecosystem. And that like seriously is great because we really do need that. I think that when we see those payment channels and security around those payment channels is, of course, I mean, this is where you get into like, oh my gosh, we stole all these funds. So, I mean, there's bridges that are a frequent attack vector and there's payment channels like this, whether they utilize the same underlying infrastructure or not, I don't know. But, I would say that this is important because it could accelerate that pipeline for people that want to develop L2 tech out there. Mm. And while it's not important immediately, eventually it probably is pretty important. Mm. I think Gene mentioned, what did he say in that AMA? Like 2023, something like that. He was envisioning L2, something like that.
Yeah, it's far out. It feels far out. They said that it's trivial, I think, right? Did they say it was trivial to some degree? I don't know. I don't know, but
trivial to brilliant people is not trivial to me. But no.
That's true, and things that are trivial to them is like over my head for sure. But
yeah, I'm like, can you explain it to me? Because I'm dumb down here.
Yeah, but you know, it'll be a bit, I think, before we have real layer two. But you know, we'll see.
I don't think we need it for a while. Also,
like, I agree.
Yeah. Now a bridge does sound really enticing. Like I'm super stoked for bridge. What about ZK? Like, are you familiar with what the state of Ethereum and Bitcoin currently is looking like as far as the tornado implications on what happens? Like, it has already started happening and will continue to happen now, like censorship wise.
Yeah, with censorship, it's going to be really interesting. If you're, and one of the main arguments that I've been seeing that's been really interesting is like, okay, let's say I run a Ethereum node. But my Ethereum node, and when I have an Ethereum validator, I'm running it on AWS, right? Let's say the government wants to say, hey, any types of these transactions are illegal. Now, Amazon might need to be able to comply with the government requests of that, right? And so they could shut down those nodes or not allow those transactions to go through. And that's just centralization. Apart from it being a attack vector, it's like that's censorship right there. It's interesting with Tornado Cash because we're starting to see that, right? Like there's people that are not supporting Tornado Cash anymore. Their GitHub got taken down. People that are the main developers are going to jail. I'm pretty sure. That's what I'm kind of seeing.
Well, you get arrested in the EU for something, you're probably going to jail, and they're probably trying to make an example out of you is my guess.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, we have the mining chain Marathon that is now only doing KYC validated OFAC compliant blocks. So they're rejecting any transactions from not known good people, apparently, is what my understanding is here. That has huge implications. Is it like all these transactions that are from supposed bad people, or what are they just like, this person isn't KYC and we're going to reject it because they are 6% of Bitcoin right there. This level of centralization bodes very poorly for crypto as a whole. I love that people like Vitalik are like outraged, fake outraged, I'd call this. Like, you're the person doing it. Like, you want to stop it, you stop it. Like, assert yourself if you don't like what's going on. Like in Bitcoin, it's going to be harder for them to come up with a solution to this. For sure, it could actually be impossible for them to get consensus around a solution set for this. This is why Chia, in my opinion, really good tech, because it's almost like they thought about this with the most decentralized blockchain. That's not changing from the most decentralized blockchain.
Go figure.
Like, yeah, go figure. At what point do we start rubbing it into all these other people? Like, should we spend like some dedicated Twitter time doing that each week, like an hour or so?
We should, but
a troll party it is then. You're on.
So, but what's really interesting to me though, is that we see a little bit of this actually on Chia with HPool. They censor blocks so they don't have fees, right?
They do. But this is the danger of no SSD, especially also, I mean,
correct.
Legit technology that does appear to work, but Jesus Christ, you're all one farmer there.
Like, you're centralized.
You can't even leave.
You're centralized, right? And
you're 100% centralized.
And that's the problem. And that's why, you know, we never endorse HPool and what they're doing, because HPool is signing blocks. You as the farmer are not signing blocks.
My early stuff that I released out there when before official pools? Did you catch any of that?
I think so, but go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, so I mean, I did videos on HPool. I even think I remember what I said. I said, I'm gonna do this because I don't care. I did have VLAN set up, so security wise, I was like, I'm okay. And I also was like, I am replotting when pool plots come out. And it was when they announced that they were going to do pool plots, I was like, all right, I'll HPool it, whatever. What the hell?
So I used someone similar to HPool called CorePool. They're a little bit more centralized as well, but that was before the official pooling protocol came out, right? So there was no other option, and you wanted to earn consistently. That was the only way to do it, right? But now you're able to, you know, be on a pool and sign blocks on your own. And that's just the way to go now, right? We did it for the culture. We did it for the tech just to try it out, see how it's going. But times have changed since then, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, straight up, I would not go back in HPool at all because I'm not bots, and it makes zero sense. And I think that, you know, when you see the technology, the plot NFT is a good plot NFT. It's just as good. Its qualities check out just the same as an OG plot. You're in the same exact boat. There's no reason to not give yourself the flexibility. And unless you are mega whale going solo, you don't want to go with OG plots. That just doesn't make sense. It's a pain to plot them also.
Like, yeah.
But at any rate, so what else do we get? Do you want to talk about NFTs? Let's talk about John.
Yeah, okay. John's killing it. Farmersmarket.cc. Again, we just have to plug it because it's just, I don't know, what he's built has been something that's been great for the ecosystem as a whole. It gets people engaged. It gets, you know, I feel like it encourages volume. You know, I think that there's some people that have been upset because, you know, he might not list a project soon enough. He's doing it all on his own manually. So if you have a project and you're trying to list it, give him some time. He'll get to it eventually.
The thing is, people don't realize, and like he's told us, and he's like, literally everybody screws up the metadata. Like, he just can't import it because everybody, like, he's always got to manually clean the data. And like, cleaning data, like, it's bulks of like big numbers is not easy to do. So, I mean, he's also working through things like site performance and making sure things are good. He's also bringing additional feature sets like the cool filters, which, I mean, awesome. He wants to bring some display tech so that people that are like us that are collecting can actually like have cool ways to interact with our NFTs. That's super awesome. Like, and he's doing it like this. And people are like, I'm upset that somebody else is like, at the same time, you got to understand, if it's easy, like if you have clean data, if you have clean metadata, if you mint a project that has nothing, man, that gets like, I think he just finally listed some, right? Like the Moore project from Morpheus, he just listed that one, the Cyberpunk. That's Kangan art. It's not like, oh, there's traits here, really. It's like, this is a bunch of art. So, I mean, it's hard for him. People need to be understanding.
Yeah, he's doing it for free. He doesn't take any money too. I think that's another thing that's pretty interesting. But, you know, and I think that he should monetize it in some way. I don't know what the monetization thing is there, you know, without maybe being a little shady with like paid listings or something. I mean, that's a way also to earn, I think. So, you know, I don't want to knock that completely, but, But yeah, I think that one thing that I'm the most excited about is, you know, he was talking about a gallery, like a showcase gallery.
Yeah, the display tech for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited for that. You know, I think that for me, I plan on having DIDs that have like my favorite NFTs in there, and to have them showcased and like available, you know, like I would be curious to see what that would look like in like a Twitter banner, for example. That would be pretty cool. So super excited for what John's doing. He's always killing it.
It really is. And so let's talk really quick about a couple of NFT projects. What are you into? What are you thinking? What are you feeling on like Chia Friends?
Yeah. So I've slowed down my NFT purchasing for sure. Okay. I think that for me, I've shelled out enough XCH, probably more than I would like. And specifically Chia Friends is easily my biggest bag. And I probably have about 9 Chia Friends currently. None of them are listed. I'm thinking about listing them. Even my current PFP, I'm thinking about listing it. You know, if someone wants it, then they can go and pick it up. But
yeah, this sounds like shady advertising, folks. Sound off below and let me know if you think this is shady advertising. Because boy, it could be.
Please buy my Chia Friends. Please buy them. I need more XCH, please. No, but you know, like, don't buy them unless you really want them. The volume's low, and you know, a while ago I kind of put article out about, you know, what could possibly happen when NFTs launch on Chia. And it's like, there's going to be very low liquidity. If you buy them, you should expect that it's going to be hard to resell them. And I think that that's been very true. Unless you have something that really someone wants, or someone's like a collector trying to buy them, it's going to be hard to sell them. And that's just been true. That's why
to everybody right now, spread messages of things, hit share buttons. Share buttons are like the most powerful buttons in the world, because that grows the ecosphere. You want transaction volume on NFTs. You want people in the ecosphere. Share content, share cool things, get out there, talk to people in other ecosystems. Those things bring new folks in. And definitely I feel like you plugged yourself. So I'm on the buy side. If you have Dodo Cat, Cat Dodo, I would like to buy Cat Dodo. That is from the Brave Seedling collection. It is somebody that is not in the United States, though, so that might get lost in translation. But I did make this appeal directly to the owner. He sent me an adorable picture of the cat that inspired this all. His cat. And it looks just like Cat Dodo.
Yeah, you've been talking about trying to figure out how to buy that from whoever owns it for a while now. And you haven't been able to find the owner?
No. It sold to somebody. I don't know who it sold to. But the creator actually was like, hey, you know, there's going to be frames of it available. So I can possibly get some frames of it later on. That would be really nice.
Have you put in a buy offer?
No, I haven't put in a buy offer because I don't think these things really. Okay. So
you should try it.
I guess I should try it. You know, it's so like, I like negotiating with people like,
yeah.
You know who was just talking about this was Maxim Goods, another NFT degen for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And like the classifieds kind of aspect of it, like, could there be a centralized website? Like, what do you think about that? Do you think that would increase the fungibility aspects of NFTs if you were like, hey, I want to buy it? And like a good old fashioned, like, this is where I want, like, Dexy could have this and it would be really cool. It's not something that would be easy to build, though.
Here's what I think is most interesting is that Dexy kind of does that. Like, you can go on Dexy and see the buy offers, but you don't know about it, right? One thing that I think is going to come is when John releases his showcase, you're going to be able to know who owns it. Now, are people going to be utilizing this showcase?
It's opt-in,
but you know, if you have a showcase, it potentially opens the door for being able to identify very, even more easily than you currently can, by having your DID public on Mint Garden. But you know, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but I really do hope that you're able to get that, that what's it called again? The chat, put in a buy offer and kind of make it low and then publicize the buy offer and say, hey, I want to negotiate, right?
Look, it was 5XCH last time it sold. What do you think? 7?
5XCH is a lot. What do you think? What are you willing to pay for it?
How is that negotiation?
I might own this one.
You're going to destroy me on this show. All right, folks, that's it. Everything is over, and I'm going to edit that last word.
Oh, no. Maybe I own it, and I'm just trying to see how much you're willing to pay for it.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past you, because I think I told you about this, and you were like, nah, don't buy it. And you probably went out and bought it, and then were like, his desire for it's not going to go away. It's going to grow.
I don't have it. I promise. I promise. But I don't know. Try and see. 7 might be good. You know, it puts him in a position of profit, maybe opens the door to some negotiations. Who knows? So
I think it's reasonable, because if you look at like more rare ones, and I mean, this is the beauty of like looking at farmersmarket.cc, is like you can objectively talk about the rarity score of something. There's a subjective thing that I fall into more myself, but there's like the, like, this is objectively what the rarity is. And like, he produces that really good. And why don't you take a second here? Explain to me rarity score in a nutshell at a high level, if you could.
There's many different ways to calculate rarity. There's a Medium article that I think John has shared that kind of talks about the ways that you can calculate rarity, because there is multiple ways to do it. I think there's like a small handful. And rarity score is the current industry standard. It's a lot of times the default. There's average rarity. And then there's a select few like other ones as well that aren't really as widely used. But you know, I think that what's pretty interesting about it is that, you know, there's two different ways of looking at it, and it is objective, but it's objective in your perception of which way you're trying to look at it. Right. And when you have a rarity score, it kind of assigns, in my opinion, a base level value comparatively with how everything else is like doing. And then based upon how it looks, it gives it like a plus maybe, or like a minus maybe. Like if it looks really ugly and no one's really going to want it, even though it's rare, it might not be priced at the same level that something else that's also rare would be at. Now, this is not NFT financial advice at all whatsoever, but it's just an interesting.
We'll never get NFT financial advice from us either. Ever.
No, you won't.
We'll never get any financial advice from us ever.
Yes, but you know, it is objective, but it's also, I think, more so subjective, and it's just kind of whatever someone's willing to pay for it at the end of the day. And that does. It does bring in an interesting just conversation in general that I hope is continually ongoing. But mm-hmm. what's also interesting too, though, is that like I feel like when people that are, you know, kind of pretty bearish just on NFTs as a whole, I think they kind of look at NFTs as like, okay, well, this is just the greater fool theory. You know, you have something.
There's a lot of people like that. Yeah.
That generates hype and like, okay, so I paid this much for it. How much are you willing to pay for it? Right. And the person that buys it from you is just a bigger fool than you, because they just paid more for it. And at the end of the day, you're just getting a piece of code and a picture. There's been talk on Twitter saying that NFTs are just altcoins that are JPEGs that come with JPEGs. And that's a pretty interesting discussion, I think, to have that we might.
So do you find yourself falling into the greater fool theory here yourself? Is that how you view it?
I try and like, I'll put up most of the NFTs that I buy for sale. Because and for lack of a better term, I might be trying to find that greater fool, cause I'm trying to make more XCH at the end of the day.
I see you get really like motivated by them, not by the price though. Like you have like a emotional state that you enter when you're evaluating the NFTs. Now, it could be that you're underlyingly doing some sort of financial calculation and you're like, ooh, that's a good one. I'll be able to sell that to another person for
okay.
More.
Yeah. So we'll talk about this. So I would say it's actually not emotional. You don't want to be emotional. And this is like something that
you are an NFT buying machine.
I don't know if I'm an NFT buying machine, but I just try not to be as emotional as I can. And it all depends on too, where you're coming from. If you're trying to say, hey, I want to buy these NFTs because I love them. I want to collect them. I don't like I don't really plan on selling these. Being emotional is great. You know, that's kind of
where I'm at with Hardy Boys and Nandy.
Yeah. And like, that's where you want to come from. Right. But if you are kind of coming into it with the sense of like, okay, I'm trying to maybe make some money on this. You know, then you definitely don't want to be emotional, because I think you'll end up spending more than you want to at the end of the day. And you might be spending more than you want to at the end of the day if you're being emotional and intentionally emotional as well. So it really just kind of depends
on me.
It just really depends on kind of where you're like coming from. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. The two different types of NFT buyers, or maybe even three. There's the emotional, there's the mechanical, for lack of a better term. And then there's the person that just, you know, kind of wants to be a collector of like a certain type, like a very, like how Josh loves the number ones, right? Like the NFTs that are labeled number one. So
buy and hold, in my opinion. So like, I doubt anybody knows this about me, but like, I collect a lot of different things. So like, collectibles has been a part of my life since I was a young child. Like, mm-hmm. early on, collectibles were a big part of my life. Had X-Men single digit comics. Sold those.
Really?
Yes. Sold those for my first car. Had I held on to them longer, but buying and holding for long periods of time, as a matter of fact, I've got a killer comic collection. I mean, but hold on to stuff is my long-term thing, because I just think that maturation of markets over time happens and desirability happens, especially when there is some level of scarcity. That's what I don't understand, though, in the NFT sphere, is does a constant stream of new NFTs dilute the scarcity effect, even if they're not the same? It's very akin to what I view comic collecting as, which is,
yeah.
No, it does not directly impact it if it is not directly produced by the same person. But it does kind of impact it if it is the same authorship, if it is the same object, if it's the same type. Yes. I think there's a dilution factor that happens at that point.
I think that you're onto something there. And it's different, though, I think, with NFTs, just in general. And I think that what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, let's look at the NFT industry as like a whole. And say, okay, like not just Chia NFTs, but let's look at Ethereum NFTs and Solana NFTs. Historically, holding on to most projects, and I'm going to say over 90% of projects end up going to zero. And so I think that I go into buying NFTs with that kind of mentality that I'm probably, you know, unless I get super lucky, I'm probably not going to be able to sell this for more. And if the longer I hold it, the more risk that I'm holding on to. Now, the things that actually appreciate are the things that are considered blue chips. Now, you don't know if it's going to be a blue chip until you hold on to it to find out, right? Or if you sell, you might have to watch from afar. But I think when I'm observing projects, I do look at it from the standpoint that the likelihood this goes to zero is pretty high. Now, these first Chia NFT projects, they are first movers in the space, right? So there's, I would argue that there's a higher chance that things that had released earlier could potentially appreciate in value, not financial advice. But, you know, there's a lot more factors than just that too. There's the creators behind it. There's value that they're providing to the community outside of just the fact that it's a picture. There's the desirability of it. Like, I love Chia Friends. I am not worried about holding on to 9 of them because of their status, because of their provenance and how they were minted by Chia. I think that most people have that understanding as well. But something like Goblins or something like Moonbirds on Chia, if I buy that and, you know, I'm buying that thinking I'm probably never going to get my money back on it. You know, that's kind of how I'm entering into that.
So really quick, before we wrap up here, we're talking about the value of NFT. I've always been wondering where the evolution of NFT comes from that adds intrinsic value, because the comic book, if you take a frame of the art, the only reason that frame of art, in my estimation, is worth something is because of the story and the community that has formed around that story. And that is a key component that is missing in most of the JPEG art. And like, thinking that it is something that lives in a Discord is a flaw. That is not a community. That is, you know, a loose gathering of people with different motives. The story that binds them together doesn't exist in the vast majority of these NFT projects. That big lacking, just glaring omission from so many projects is, in my estimation, why you see them, like you said, 99%, 95% fail to mature in value. They don't have a story. They don't have something compelling binding the community together to where it forms value that people love, have long-lasting emotional relationships with, and identify historic key points in time that they will later reflect on as valuable moments in their life. So that's certainly how I feel when I think about comic books. And I thought about this the other day when I was like going through some comic books of my older stuff. And I was like, ooh, I really like these. And I thought about all that emotional investment that I had when I was a teenager buying some of those. And I was like, wow, man, that was so awesome. And I was just like reliving it. And I don't think you get that because there's not a story behind most of these. Do you think that would be so bearish if somebody came out with a story? Now, arguably, there's some people that have some complex things going on. Crew of Eight is very complex, but I don't have the time for that story. There's a succinctness to a comic book, and like, it's always solvable just by continuing to read. Like, there's no barrier to me finishing the story. And I feel like if there's a barrier to me finishing, that probably also doesn't help me out to add value to my perception of something. Also, games. There's a lot of NFT projects that talk about games. Have you ever developed a game? It's really hard. It's really expensive to do it good. Going to be a lot of money, a lot of time.
Yeah, if an NFT project mentions that they're making a game, I'm like pretty bearish. And you know this, I've talked about this a lot.
That's why I clued you on this one. I just
I know you wanted to hear me say it. People shouldn't make games for crypto. People should make games that are games and that are good, and they might integrate crypto in some way, shape, or form. Shouldn't be the other way around. Please don't make a game. Please don't come out with a project. And please just no. Make a game and then say, oh, there's going to be crypto aspects to it. Do that. Okay. Do that.
If you're a game developer, start there. Seems like a really good, you know what? You can develop a really good story with a game.
Yeah.
And then you can bring crypto assets into it that would tie people in. And then the offering is like complete when you offer it. This has this. That would get some hella buy-in. Now, will we see it? I don't know in Chia. But I definitely got to say that this has been one of the best chats we've had. This has been so much fun, man.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And one thing that I did want to say, though, too, is that if you want to make a crypto game and prove me wrong, please do. I love gaming. So I am very open to having my mind being changed. I just haven't seen it yet. So, yeah.
I want to see it too. And literally, folks, if you're looking out there for how you might be able to easily do that, why don't you check out, it's silly. It's on Steam. It's called Click Team. It's a really easy to make 8-bit kind of game thing. Point and click, literally, game creation. Really probably about the easiest way to create one out there that I can think of. I think Five Nights at Freddy's was created with it. So it can make pretty cool games. Mm-hmm. But, single person could probably do it without much dev talent at all. Yeah. All right, everybody, we will see you guys next time. Austin, toss out your socials so people can get a hold of you.
Yeah, you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter on @abrownswag. Feel free to follow me there. That's pretty much where I live. Or on Discord if you want to. Actually, our Discord's closed, so you actually can't come in because of scammers. So there you go. That's all that there is.
Jesus Christ, we sound so like, hi, it's a private club. That is not what's going on. Eventually, we will figure it out. It's just not a priority. But I'll tell you what is a priority is making sure the community is safe that we have right now. So that takes precedent, unfortunately. And you can hit me up at Ghost Spaceport on Twitter, the website digitalspaceport.com. And you can also hit me out on TikTok, Digital Spaceport. I'm posting
Whoa.
Stuff. So yeah.